At various times of year, nature can trigger thoughts of certain events or rituals. The first snowfall, skiers start waxing up. Spring crocuses move gardeners to start plotting their planting strategies.
You'll know when we're there when we stop.
When leaves start turning color, some think of baseball playoffs and the start of football. Outdoorsy art lovers, however, know that's the cue for their pilgrimage to the tree museum.
Hey, look what up.
An annually updated outdoor sculpture exhibition near Gravenhurst, about 2 hours north of Toronto.
Look at all the cars. I've never seen so many cars.
The improvised parking lot in a field was quite full for the opening on Labor Day weekend.
Hi.
Stick anywhere at the end there is fine.
Thanks.
Once parked,
up we go. We're going to go for the high ground here, I think.
Visitors head up the 2 kilometer road that bisects the property.
Come on, bug spray.
Oops.
Uh-oh.
Didn't bring any. Oh well, bug spray. Come on. I don't think so.
Whatever your tolerance for art, there's just something good about a walk in the woods. And before you even get to the first art installations here at the Tree Museum, nature proves that it is full of teachable moments. At one point during the walk in, for instance, you might notice a pond where the water level is disconcertingly at about shoulder height.
Whoa! Yeah. It's higher than us!
Yeah. Now why is that?
I don't know. There's so much rain.
What do you see here, right along here?
Grass.
And what do you think the grass is on?
Dirt.
Yeah, and why is the dirt high there?
Beaver dam.
Exactly, you got it.
While some children might find traditional art galleries boring, the Tree Museum is more like an outdoor adventure park.
What the heck is that?
Normally a skateboarder, 9-year-old Michael Nazwaski was seized by the first installation, a 20-foot-high inclined steel triangle.
Yeah, okay. Whoa! Awesome! That isn't a piece of art, that's a playground.
Normally, cars are not allowed, but for the opening, a volunteer towed a wagon back and forth, bringing visitors in along the 2 kilometer stretch.
That's cool.
We'll catch that on the way back.
However you venture in, eventually you reach a small cottage that marks the hub around which 12 years of sculpture has been installed. Usually the cottage is closed, so visitors should think to bring supplies and be prepared to, rough it for a couple of hours. Today, however, it served as a reception room for the opening. By mid-afternoon, co-curator Anne O'Callaghan welcomed the approximately 50 visitors.
So, here we are, 12 years later, and you guys are still coming. Thank you, thank you. This is great. You know, it's a long weekend. You battled the 400. Wow.
And pointed out some of the artists who have contributed over the past 12 years.
We have Reinhard Reitenstein, Anne-Marie Beneteau, Lila Rye, Walter Williams, John Dixon, who has a piece, his Beaver Lodge, Up the Hill and Down the Pathway, and the best outhouse in the whole county.
Yay!
So lots of pinwheel sandwiches, lots of butter tarts.
Yeah. Please eat them all. Please.
And thanks for coming.
After grabbing a few of those butter tarts myself, I headed back with one of this year's featured artists, Diane Marie, to see her work.
Hi, Diane.
How are you?
Good. Sorry we're late. Or not. Right in the middle.
Is this your dog?
Yes.
Hello, friendly dog.
Spencer.
After a little way, we stepped off the main road and followed the arrows and fluorescent trail tape into the woods.
So, we're heading down your path. How'd you... You were just stumbling around? How'd you pick the area?
Stumbling around might describe it, but I think that's the challenge of every artist who works up here, is they go over the sites and explore it, and without wandering too far off the path so that you don't get completely lost. But some of this area had already been opened up a little bit.
A few minutes later, we arrived at the site she'd chosen.
This site was just it just seemed like an amazing site. I've thinned out a few trees up there so you get, or the underbrush anyhow, so that you get a vista to this marsh that's in behind it, which is pretty spectacularly smooth, marsh that has evidence of a big animal that's been going through it. So we think maybe there's been a moose that's been through there recently.
And what kind of direction did you get from, I guess, Ann O'Callaghan and E.J. Lightman when you first were contacted to do this?
I think that I started.
And there, we sat ourselves down on a conveniently located semicircular outcrop of granite.
In doing, look at this, is the perfect bench here, huh? Isn't this a like, beautiful space? Look at this place to sit on this Canadian sheet.
Feels like an art gallery where they put those benches in the middle of, for the tired people like me.
But it happens to be natural Canadian shield granite covered with a beautiful pattern of lichen and moss. Looking out at this marsh with trees surrounding it everywhere. And so it's a very quiet, beautiful place. And in the midst of all of this set into it is a billboard.
And this is the same billboard we saw in your gallery in Toronto, which someone's described for us already, so I think we've got a pretty good sense of what it is.
That was the test to see. That one in my studio was a test for it, figuring out what size, how.
Just a few days before, I'd stopped at Diane's satellite opening at her studio gallery in Toronto's West End. There, I got a preview of her work, Experience Canada, that she'd prepared and installed at the Tree Museum.
My name is Snaiga Saleika. I'm looking at, I guess, a reproduction of billboards that are in the Tree Museum. That's what I understand them to be. And they are, each billboard has five narrow panels that show part of a storefront, and the store owner is in front of it. And instead of actually seeing the store owner, you see where his jacket or shirt would be, is you have a little glimpse into a piece of the Canadian wilderness with no buildings.
And how about this one over here? Is a little bit different style. Can you describe the style of this one?
A bit more active. So actually, it's not just one street owner standing in front of his shop. This one seems to be couples walking the streets primarily. And so it's, if I'm not mistaken, I think Diane concentrates on the area around Bloor and Lansdowne, so I'm assuming that that's where she's taken these photographs. And in the photograph, you see the banners which Diane has produced. So there's a view within a view. And again, the people who are the subjects of these sort of slim banners seem to be replaced. Their clothing has been replaced, and their faces have been replaced by beautiful little tiny bits of Canadian landscape.
Back at the Tree Museum, artist Diane Marie put the billboards in context.
And then set in behind that is a full forest. So it's this gradiated landscape of rock, marsh, water, lily pads, and then a spectacular Canadian landscape. It's completely picturesque. And then in the forefront of all of this is this billboard that looks like maybe it's an ad for a Canadian ad for something or another, or maybe it's a gasoline ad, or it looks like it could be something that's selling a property, or, you know. But it's red, so it's red and white, lots of red and white, so it seems like it's probably some kind of official government thing.
It could also be a Tourism Canada, if there is such a thing. It's like Experience Canada.
Yeah, but very corporate looking. And then it says Experience Canada. So it could be a Tourism Canada thing. And then it has five portraits of people who are shop owners on Bloor Street, inner city Bloor Street, who own those stores, who are all new Canadians and have started stores. And they've all immigrated here, drawn by the allure of the Canadian landscape, I think, in part, and there are conversations with them. The landscape meaning more than just the landscape for them, many of them coming from countries that were, you know, that were have suffered war or have terrible environmental limitations. The idea of, you know, coming from a desert country and imagining a country that is filled with lakes, or coming from a very rocky climate with very few trees, and to imagine Canada as just this paradise. But it also represents endless resources and freedom. and opportunity, all that stuff that we think is a bit corny, but in fact, that's what's drawing people to him. And in, to some extent, it's a bit of a reality. But then, of course, people get here, and they're in inner cities, and they start a store that is their own culture. It reinforces a small, often ethnic community or small community.
Sure, the one in the middle, for instance, says halal meat and has, I guess, Arabic signage on it.
And Mexican and that one's Italian, and the other one's Vietnamese. So people came here and interestingly enough, then they opened these stores to some extent, drawing on their own community to support them. But what happens, of course, is that they're discovered and that they become part of the general Canadian experience. So suddenly everybody's eating samosas, or they, you know, everything has to be spiced in the same Indian fashion that they've become so accustomed to, because that's becomes the ever-evolving Canada. But those people themselves are first generation, and for many years, and maybe for their lifetime, their experience is inner city. Their kids may, you know, be coming up to places like this, but for most of them, the dream of the Canadian landscape or the Canadian openness and the Canadian lakes remains a dream. So the images that I have here of those store owners are simply their silhouette, and inset into the silhouette is a landscape that is from the Tree Museum or from this Canadian place that you imagine, because we still, I think, fill our minds with those imagined landscapes, which are part of the Canadian identity.
We better move. I'm getting eaten alive here, I'm afraid. So I didn't take them seriously when they said put bug goo on.
You didn't
so.
Do it?
No.
Mosquitoes probably won't be a problem for fall visitors.
I'm foolish.
But then again, we didn't think it would be a problem on Labor Day weekend.
And we can walk and talk. Are you an outdoors person in your real life, or?
I would like to say that I am, but no, I'm a...
Diane kindly loaned me the last of her bug spray and led me through the woods, over an improvised bridge, and down to a long, very narrow lake that this year's second guest artist, Ed Pien, had chosen as his site.
I think they're down here.
Well, this is very pretty.
This is a beautiful site. Its site is pretty fabulous.
Ed was just in the process of describing one of his three works,
rocks, and they're tossed into the,
this one entitled False.
You're looking at a rock face, so it's quite high and it's quite spectacular. It's some people described it as spider webby-like because of the tying. It looks like nets that I'm thinking of are the ones that are on placed on the side of mountains to prevent rocks from tumbling down and killing people. The fluorescent orange gives it an illusion that it doesn't belong there. It's quite out of the ordinary in terms of the colors. And when this place is still, you see a reflection, a mirror reflection of itself. I wanted something that cascaded. So it's a rope netting that's hand tied, and it's fluorescent orange. And it comes down and it actually goes into the water. So it feels quite continuous. It cascades down like lava or like a waterfall. And then it creates this... kind of continue band when it's reflected, so you get this extra long piece. So it's actually now with an illusion, it's over 100 feet high. I'm thinking about the history of landscape paintings, where a lot of people use the stillness of the water to create this pristine, tranquil, but very mirror-like image. So this is like that. I started out as a painter, actually, so landscape is in my brain, I guess.
It's also beautiful looking at the... There's lots of neat things along the shoreline that are reflected in the water itself. A couple of beautiful triangular rocks,
right,
a post, and over here this fallen birch tree.
Right. Well, what's interesting about nature is when we see it, we imagine it to be what we experience, which is, you know, like behind this tree there's some twigs, or in front of this tree there's some leaves. But when it comes to be this kind of reflected quality, space becomes very ambiguous. Everything becomes patterned and geometric and kind of otherworldly. I love that sense of, you know, dropping away and suddenly there's no bottom. And there's a great sense of disorientation too.
I then asked Ed to show me one of his other works. It's called Psycho and is a collection of mirrored discs suspended almost invisibly high in the trees.
Can we walk back and maybe see? Cycles is the...
Cycle.
Cycle. P-S-Y, Psychos.
Yeah, and psycho, like crazy. And the falls is F-A-L-S-E.
Now, I have to keep my eyes open because these are kind of hard to spot up here. Ah, here we go, finally.
Right, and it's also fairly calm right now, so they're not moving as much. But once you start to see one, you see other ones. And they're all over the place. There are 12 of them. Most people can count up to 11.
Describe them for me if you can.
They are mirror-like metal discs, 2.5 feet in diameter. And they are suspended by a single cable from a tree branch. And they're scattered throughout this area. And they rotate because of the wind current that comes through the forest. And as they rotate, they pick up different views of the forest. They also look like blips in the landscape. It's almost like a collage because they interrupt what you see by giving you another view from somewhere else through the reflection. When it's sunny, right now it's not sunny, but when it's sunny, the air current becomes even more apparent, and they really rotate. One side of the disc is slightly concave, and the other side is flat. The concave side is quite interesting in that anything in front is fairly focused, but when it starts to rotate, it stretches the image out from in the back. So it looks like, as if you're sitting in a train watching the landscape go by really quickly.
And what do you hope a visitor would take away from, if they even thought to look up and spot these things, and I'm sure they will, but what do you hope they would take away from seeing this installation, for instance?
Well, it's just a way of re-experiencing or experiencing what they think they know in a different way. It's quite subtle, unexpected, and they really disrupt the surface of the landscape in subtle ways, obviously. And if there is light, the light scurries through the forest floor like little animals. So there's a playfulness about it as well. Taking away, I guess, to maybe look more carefully at what you're looking at as opposed to being guided by preconceptions of what a forest is. And also in a forest, you know, especially when there's sun and light and shadows, everything becomes quite ambiguous as a space. You don't know what's in front and what's in the back. And these things further accentuate that sense of ambiguity.
It is quite a strange as you walk in. You don't expect to see little bits of the forest moving. I mean, they're so subtly installed that suddenly you see, God, yeah. there's leaves and branches are actually moving and the rest of it's not. It's very strange.
Right. It's true. And that one, you can see it's slightly concave so that it has a distorted, stretched kind of quality going across it.
Thank you very much for the tour.
You're welcome. Thanks, Peter.
And with that, we headed out of the woods, back down the road to the main entrance. We'd seen some new works, some old favorites, and we were already looking forward to next year's visit. From the Tree Museum near Gravenhurst, Ontario, I'm Peter Stock.
Tree Paradise, put up a parking lot.